Hello, hello, Winning Season community. Welcome back. This podcast is for underrepresented leaders who work in male-dominated spaces. I am Jacqueline Twilley, your host. And today's guest is none other than LaDondra Wilson, who is a philanthropist, a leader, a leadership cultivator, a community activist. I can go on and on about this woman. I absolutely adore her. I'm going to go ahead and apologize because we might cackle a little bit because I enjoy her presence so much. LaDondra, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I just feel like I'm at home whenever I'm with Jacqueline. So she's correct. This is like a safe space. And we're just going to probably forget that you guys are listening.
That's probably going to happen. So let me get some formal things out of the way. Can you tell us all of the titles that you carry during the day?
So my titles are Vice President of Social Responsibility for the Dallas Wings, as well as the inaugural Executive Director of the Dallas Wings Community Foundation. Sounds like a lot. It is a mouthful. It basically just means that I oversee all of our philanthropic efforts for the WNBA Dallas Wings team.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that. But let's go a little bit beyond your LinkedIn profile. What makes LaDondra LaDondra?
Oh, man. I always like to start with I'm an equity enthusiast. I mean, I love all things equity. I love all things women empowerment. I am a social justice freak. I just believe that everyone belongs on the same even playing field and that we all belong here together, shoulder to shoulder, arm in arm. And so that's who I am. I love all things women, all things pink, and all things free. I just a lover of life.
Yes. I'm going to skip a couple of things because you've been on the podcast before a few years back. Y'all can find the link to the previous episodes in the show notes. One of the things that you share is that you boldly accept failures as opportunities to coach and empower others, and that you're a servant leader, happily embracing life as a lifelong lover. Tell me more about that.
So I have this phrase. I did not make it up, so please don't come with the copyright infringement. But I always say that I felt forward. And I have learned, even in this new role, I came to this role after being laid off. And so, but I found fulfillment in this role. And it was like, wow, I felt, but I really found my purpose in this role. And so I just find that through failure, we find opportunities to grow and to evolve and to find opportunities that maybe where we were was just stepping stones to where we were to come. And so I always like to say I fail forward.
And you're so open about that, that it inspires others to do the same, which brings me to the reason for this celebration of 31 women featured on the Winning Season podcast. It is Women's History Month, and the theme is Imagine a Gender Equal World, hashtag Inspire Inclusion. So tell me about your role in Inspire Inclusion. How do you take it?
Well, I work for the WNBA, and so first here in Texas is the only professional women's sports team. And so we talk about inclusivity a lot. I mean, in the hallways, in the restrooms, on the way to the gym, on the way to the game, because it is a male-dominated industry. And so it is like the everyday topic. It is not a day that we don't talk about it because there are so many spaces and places that women are told that we can't be, that we're not supposed to be. So even every day in the boardroom, you know, we're like, no, there should be a woman here. There are women on the basketball. We literally represent women for this organization. So why isn't there a woman representing them in every decision that's made? So we ensure that there's inclusivity. But, you know, in all of the decisions for my role, I'm ensuring that we're having community members at the table when we're making decisions for the type of work that we'll do in the community. So just recently, we started an ambassadors program because we're doing all this amazing work for these marginalized communities. And we're saying, oh my gosh, they need these resources. But how do we know what resources they need if we're not including them in the conversation? So when we talk about inclusivity, we really talk about it a lot from a space of empowerment and empowering these women that are already probably that have voices for themselves. Like, you and I are very empowered. We can really speak for ourselves, likely. My players can likely speak for themselves. But likely, the marginalized communities that I represent, there's not a microphone for them to speak on. There's not people going to their communities to say, what do you really want? I use this example a lot. You know, Thanksgiving come, everyone's doing a turkey drop. You know, people want a turkey.
Oh, no.
We're not being inclusive in how we even serve. And so when I talk about inclusivity, it's not just talking about empowerment of having spaces and places for people in the boardroom. We're even talking about people from marginalized spaces that are likely overlooked and underserved, frankly, but definitely that don't have a voice. So inclusivity at all levels.
And when I hear you say that, what I hear you saying is that you challenge norms, create space, and you lift as you climb, which is something that you live every day.
Yeah, it's a disruptor. You either love me or hate to see me coming.
Listen, and I love to see you coming, and anybody who hates to see you coming, they know they're going to be challenged to rise up and level up. And I appreciate your leadership for doing that, because in any space, when someone deals with you, they know they have to bring their A game because they're talking to LaDondra Wilson. So, okay. Honey, that makes me proud to call you my friend over and over again.
Thank you so much. But we have to continue to, you know, people use the word challenge, but I like to say, let's just have a courageous conversation. We all have different opinions, and that's fine. But if we can find what are we really doing, whose interest is, are we really looking at who, you know, what is it in the best interest of and at whom, then we really can say, you know, well, maybe there's a different way to do this, and who's been included in those conversations is most important.
Absolutely. You've spoken to me before on the podcast about coming from a marginalized community, Oak Cliff, Dallas. And what I would love to hear is, who were the people in your community that inspired you to be the woman that you are?
Yeah, I talk a lot now about my two grandmothers, the matriarchs of my family. I think growing up, I didn't know that those were going to be the women that inspired the path that I decided to take. These were two both women that did not go to college, that just took care of their families, made a lot of sacrifices, but they instilled the values that I have now, that determination, resilience, not taking no for an answer, but those family values of not forgetting where you come from, not being embarrassed about where you come from, but using that as motivation to want more and to want better. And so now that I look back on it, I'm like, wow, they endured so much. They didn't complain. They, again, used it as motivation. And so now I'm like, those are the women that really have the values that I really hope to have as I grow older, wiser, I like to say. We're not getting older, just getting wiser. But those are the values that I have, because I think, you know, the education, you know, you can have those, you can read a book, but those are the values that you don't learn, that you have to have instilled inside.
You shared that three of the values that guide your decision making are empathy, compassion, and integrity. What made those three rise to the top of your list?
Again, I think it's my upbringing, just enduring some of the things. And I say this a lot jokingly, you know, growing up, I don't think I realized that we were the working poor. It probably wasn't until I went to college and I was like, oh, wow, I didn't have those nice things. Because again, my family always managed to ensure that we had what we needed. And probably not always what I wanted, but we had our basic needs. And so I'm now very empathetic. And even when we didn't have the things that we wanted, my family ensured that we always gave back to those that were less fortunate. So I've just always been extremely compassionate and empathetic of others. And so that's how now everything that I do, I'm always thinking of those that are less fortunate. And it's just been my moral compass moving forward through my career and through my personal life.
That's such a beautiful thread. You're not only active at work, and I know how much you work, but you're also involved in your church community and in your sorority, and you are a philanthropist. So can you tell me about your philanthropic side of your life?
Yeah, you know, again, coming from very little, I think it was always, well, I don't have a lot to give. And I quickly learned that it's not just, you know, we always say give with your time, talent, and treasures. And so I quickly learned as a traditional social worker, it was not going to always be my treasures. And it definitely wasn't. But I have learned now about giving circles, which means we can give our little resources. And when you give your little resources and this person give their little resources, those add up. And so I'm very happy to be a part of the Heritage Giving Circle, which is an African-American woman giving circle that gives to nonprofits that are led by African-American women's nonprofit executive directors that serve a nonprofit or that serve African-American communities. And so it's very intentional. And that's how I like to be when I give. Very intentional. Those grassroots organizations that are likely overlooked, that are under-resourced, that don't have the resources to have grant writers to apply for these large grants. And so they're never going to get those $100,000 or six-figure grants, but they're making the impact. And unfortunately, they're really overlooked. So started to look at how can I make a big impact with maybe smaller treasures. And so Giving Circles has been one of those with my treasures. With my talents, just looking at what are the skill sets, my professional skill sets that I can contribute to, again, some of those smaller nonprofits that may not have, I'm really good at organizational skills, administrative skills. So can I donate those skills to organizations that may not be able to afford that? So I started doing that really early in my career, serving on nonprofit boards. I think I'm now up to 9. We're going to work that number. I'm starting to pass the baton to other young leaders and say, it's your turn.
I was about to say, I'm going to help you with this because...
Oh, yes. We're working on it. We're working on it. A lot of some of those are not working boards. I used to be on a lot of working boards. Some of those are now more boards that are, we meet annually, and it's just because of my role. But we are passing the baton to some of those young and up and coming leaders. And then again, a lot, and then you do serve in time. And I don't have a lot of time as much as I used to, but I do make a conscious effort to ensure that now my time is this year's word was alignment for 2024. So it definitely needs to be aligned with my purpose, especially if it's going to take time. And so time, talent, and treasure has been something that as a philanthropist is very important.
Let's unpack the alignment theme for your life, because I recently heard you share that with someone else, and I want to understand, that's also my word, so I want to understand from your perspective, what does that mean long term for you, not just in 2024?
Yeah, I think I shared with this person, or in what I've been sharing with people about the word, is that I will say yes to everything because I am passionate about so much, because there's so much that we as a society need to address. But what I've had to learn is that I can't be everything to all people and to everything, that there's someone that is better at those things than I am. And so what I can do is connect people. But this year, it's not about saying, I used to say, first I would just say yes. Then I learned how you don't have to say yes to everything. So then I learned how to say no, but it was a no with a comma. It would be no, but I know someone else. And I would do all of this work trying to find someone to connect them to whatever their problem is, to help them solve the issue. So then I learned that no is a complete sentence. It's no, period. So I worked on that. That was a balance, and that last year was balance. This year is alignment, and it really is this aligned with your purpose? Everyone has a purpose, and I was just all over the place doing the well-intended, but doing everything. And so I really feel that there's no way I'm going to fulfill my purpose if I'm not in alignment. I'm all in someone else's lane. If you're driving in someone else's lane, what's going to happen? There's going to be a collision. And so this year and beyond, I do feel that unless I'm aligned, I'm never going to get to my destination. I'm going to continue to have those collisions. It may be just a fender bender, and there's like, to be frank, that's what's happened. I've had little small fender benders, maybe a little scuff here and there. Maybe I've just hit a curb. No one saw it, so it's fine. But now it's truly time to go full throttle. You know, we're going to still stay in the speed limit, but we need to be moving forward in alignment to the purpose. So that's what's going on beyond 2024.
I want to take a step back for a moment and go back to a previous role that you held. You ran leadership development for young professionals, for many of the top executives in Dallas and the surrounding areas, as well as a women's executive roundtable. So as someone who intentionally develops leaders, what advice would you give to them about getting in alignment with their self and their long-term goals?
You know, the first thing is to find your why. I think until you know what it is that you want to do and why you're doing it, you're just going to be chasing a dream, an unknown dream. And so that's what I've had to do, like, frankly, over, I would say, since the pandemic, when we all had to sit down with ourselves and really learn ourselves. Because again, especially as a social worker, everyone else's problems was my problem. And so until I had to say, okay, that's your problem, and I would leave that problem at work, and then I would come home and deal with LD. And that's when I started to learn my why. Why are you here? What's your purpose? So as soon as a leader can learn their why, then their purpose, and then get in alignment with it, then that's when you get to start to move forward and then start to propel. But a leader must know what their why is.
On top of that, from your experience developing leaders on such a large scale, what did you learn about yourself?
I learned that, again, I cannot be everything to all people. You know, you have various leadership types, and that's okay. But one, I had to know what my leadership type was, and I did have to learn what the other leadership types was so I could know how to work with them. So you do need to know what the leadership types are, but that doesn't mean you need to be in your leadership type to accommodate all of the others. You just need to know how to work with them. And so I think at one part of my career, I was trying to be every single leadership site so I could work well with them. And it wasn't that. I just needed to know, as a servant leader, how do I work with this authoritative leader? How do I work? So that was the really turning point of myself, of like, okay, I can be this servant leader and still learn how to be assertive and still be a forefront leader. That doesn't mean I'm not the leader just because I'm a servant leader. And so that's when my career started to shift.
And do you think there was a specific moment where you tapped into being an unapologetic leader and you really just started to show up fully as yourself in all aspects of your work life?
When I was laid off.
Okay, tell me about this.
You know, I joke about it now. I laugh about this so much. I said, oh my gosh, I was fired on my day off. And because I actually had taken PTO on the day that I was laid off. And I should stop saying I was fired on my day off. That is not a funny joke. But I was on PTO the day that I was laid off. And so I always say that joke. It's a blessing in disguise, because I think I had gotten really content, because as you mentioned, I was working with the top leaders. I learned so much. I had a robust book of business. I was, you know, working across different industries, and it really was an amazing experience. But I got content, and I knew that I wasn't completely fulfilled, because I was very, very passionate about making more impact in the community. And in that role, I was developing leaders, but I wasn't able to make the type of impact that I wanted to. I wasn't a direct decision maker. And so there were just things that I was left unfulfilled. I would leave work and then I would go make, you know, go volunteer with the sorority or go to church and do this. Or I'll raise my hand to every other organization that I was in, because I didn't have that role in my role at with the organization that I was with. And so it wasn't until I was laid off that I was like, okay, what is it that you really want to do? And I would not have done that had I not been laid off. And so at that time, I was like, you know what? This is a blessing. And so now I can laugh about it. But had I not been, I would have been like, I had that conversation with myself probably about 16 months prior to being laid off. Like, this is good, but there's something else. And I'm going to just, and I just kept using the excuse, well, I hadn't found what that next thing was, but I wasn't intentionally looking.
Wow, what an incredible experience to see how something in the moment can be stressful, but really can turn to be a blessing upon reflection. I want to get a little bit personal with you, because we can, because I know you well enough. What does it feel like to be a Black woman executive in the WNBA and you're still feet on the ground in Oak Cliff, what does that mean for you inspiring the younger girls who are growing up?
Well, this is exactly the fulfillment that I hope that I would have in a career. And obviously, there's so much more that I hope to accomplish as a professional. But the WNBA is comprised of 80% of our players are African-American women. And so even when I came into this role almost 4 years ago, that wasn't reflected in the front office, in the boardroom. And we've made great strides. And in our front office, 57% of our executive team are women. So there are more women than men, but that is unheard of across the league. Now, of our executive team, there are two African-American women, but when I came, I was the first African-American woman, executive woman hired in the franchise history and the only African-American woman. So now there are two of us. But, you know, and I used to wear that like a badge of honor. I was like, the first, the youngest. And now I'm just like, that's so, you know, that's a whole other issue. But I take it with great pride, and I'm so excited about it because I always say, if you can see her, you can be her. But not just that, I don't want you to be me. I want you to be better than me. And so for me now, it's like, I don't want to be the WNBA Black executive that sits here with the badge of honor. I want to go back to where I'm from, and they see that. I want them to come to these games and not just see me. I want them to see the players. I want them to see my other colleagues that look like me. And I want them to know that they can not only be us, they can be better than us. In fact, I want them to get here a lot quicker than it took me for someone like me to be in this role. And so that's why it's imperative for me to make sure that I'm feet to the ground and not just sending a video or sending them tickets to come see me. I mean, that's one thing for me to invite them to come see a game, but it's another thing for me to be there in the community and to bring my players there so they can, so they too can see where I'm from. And then for the player, for the community to know that I've not forgotten about them and that, you know, I don't care where I'm at. I could be in another country. They're going to know where Oak Cliff is on the map.
I love that. Always representing. I'm looking at the picture behind you of the team, and let's talk about winning season. What is it like for a team that was underrated, shining and winning and thriving? What is it like for you all?
Oh, man. Again, going back to my social work career, I'm always, always going to want to work with the underdog. Again, that's why, you know, people ask me, do you like working in sports? Well, I like working in women's sports. Why? Because the disparities between men and women obviously is very, you know, that's obvious. It's there. But with the Dallas Wings, we had been the youngest team in the franchise for years. You know, we were the Detroit Shock, then we were the Tulsa Shock. And so we've been the Dallas Wings just going into our ninth season. And so last season, you know, people were just like, yeah, they're no one. And we had some pretty young team. We didn't have any veterans considered veterans until last season. And so we did have some people come on our team that had some years under them, but it wasn't really even just those. It was really just the entire team coming together and working as a team with the new head coach and front office. I mean, it was really a team effort from the front office to the players, to the coach, to even our executive leadership, investors and owners in our corporate partners, everyone just pouring in and investing into our full team. And for the first time in history, made it to the semifinals. And so the sky's the limit, but the amount of work. So what I get to see behind the scenes, the amount of work and grit that those ladies put into this game. But not only that, into the community work. So, fortunately, I get to work with the ladies on all of their community appearances. And there's not been any other team that have had a player or more than one player win a community assist award in one season. And our two all-stars, Arike Agunbowale and Satu Sabli, so our top two players also won community assist awards. So we don't just, and we talk about this, from our head coach to myself to our president and CEO, we're not just going to be champions on that court. You only win when you care about the community. And we talk about that from training camp to the last game in the season. And so I'm very, very, very proud of that. And so they know, everybody know where LD is from, and they're very happy when I take them back to Oak Cliff with me, and we work year round. We have an appearance tomorrow, so it doesn't stop. It doesn't end when the last game. So I'm very, very proud of our ladies.
I'm so proud of you as well, just always remaining true to who you are and lifting as you climb. That I've experienced that for myself, so I want to publicly thank you because you have opened a lot of doors for me. You've done it very selflessly, and I appreciate your friendship as well, as somebody I can come to as a woman in leadership and have some candid conversations with you. My final question, because I could go on all day, is when was a specific moment that you realized that you were in a winning season?
Oh, wow. I'll tell you. This is funny. The term winning season, I always say the seasons change. I had a very challenging season last year. I've had a lot of losses, but I lost my final parent last year, this time of year, last year, and my mother. And so I don't know. I think, I always say God gives us double for our trouble. And so I just think it was likely God's grace of knowing like, whew, this has been a rough year. But I would say at the end of last year, there were just a lot of blessings and accolades and recognitions and opportunities and doors opening for me. But what I always like to tell people, especially younger people and people that see, because you see social media and a lot of people think that that's like microwavable blessings and things that are happening overnight. And because you know me and we've known each other for so long, like those are seeds that have been planted. And I have always been, again, I mentioned me being a servant leader. I've always been the behind the scenes, like I'll go get it done. Y'all go be in the front. I really don't care. So all of the new stuff that people are seeing and the posts that I make now, and people are like, oh my, and I even get tired of posting. I'm like, here comes something else. Or sometimes I don't post because I'm like, am I posting too much? But this is my winning season. This is, these are the seeds that I planted a long time ago by the grace of God, the doors that he has opened. So I believe when I realized it was my winning season, I think it was because I think it was just one day. I was like, these are the prayers that I prayed. These are that are being answered now. So I don't know exactly when I was like, this is my winning season, but I think that I've had a lot of losses and felt forward a lot, but I do believe it was, I always like to say double for my trouble, but I believe it's just seeds that have been planted that are blooming.
Beautiful. Can you tell the winning season community how to connect with you?
Yes. LinkedIn is where I thrive. I tell people I'm a senior citizen millennial. And so I am not the one on all the social medias all the time. I am working on it. But LinkedIn at LaDondra Wilson and Instagram at Lead with LD. And I promise you guys, I'll be bringing more content, website coming soon. But please connect with me on LinkedIn and Instagram for now.
And on that, you are also available for people to book you as a leadership speaker in their workplace and organization. So y'all hit her up for that. Real, y'all. Baby, I got you. You got me. I got you.
My friend.
All right, winning season community. Until next time, continue to emulate excellence and eliminate excuses.